Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's not just Friday, it's Follow-Up Friday, where we dig a little deeper on some things that have come up on the show. Let's dig a little deeper on one of the more confusing parts of the MTA bailout passed in Albany this week. The bailout is funded in part by a new payroll tax, one-third of 1% on almost every employer in the 12 counties served by the MTA. But the deal also includes a way to reimburse some school districts for most or all of that money, more state aid to their school districts through exemptions or reimbursements at the level of the tax. Confused? So am I. Can the same tax taken from employers fund both transit and schools? Let's talk to an important opponent of this deal, Westchester County Executive Andy Spano. Mr. Spano, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
And before you argue against this arrangement, which I'll give you a chance to do, just try to explain it for us. The tax is on most employers, but not all. Do I have that right?
It's on all employers except schools.
Except schools. Why?
Except school.
Why schools?
Well, it's just a political arrangement. I mean, two senators held out from Long Island for this. There was only 32 votes in the Senate, so they had to give in. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Is it dollar for dollar? Some versions of the reporting that I've seen seem to say that it is.
Yeah, it seems to be dollar for dollar, and I think it adds up to $60 million. And that has to be gotten from somewhere else at some time. I don't know how they're going to do this.
To my question in the introduction, can the same tax taken from employers fund both transit and schools? So it's
possible. I'll give you another one, though. Is the transit authority, is the MTA paying this tax? And if the question, the question may be yes, but if it's no, why not? And if it's yes, how stupid is that?
Is the MTA, as an employer, paying this tax on its employees?
And then, yeah, right.
I presume they are. Yes?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, right. So now we have to raise money so that they can pay the employee tax, the employer tax also.
Yeah.
The payroll tax.
You know, I don't know. People with kids in the public schools still pay taxes, some of which go to the public schools. So maybe that part isn't so absurd.
It's absurd in the light of the economy to put this burden on employers, businesses, some of them on a tether right now, nonprofit agencies, local governments. I mean, that's what it's on. And it addresses not the systemic problem, which is the way the MTA is run, but just addresses the money issue. And the money issue is an outcome of the systemic problem and never gets to it.
But it's not just as if they have a management issue. I mean, this hole in the budget, which reflects the economy, is unprecedented and is to some degree, a function of the actual economy out there, isn't it?
We're all facing the same things. And what we do is we back off and we take care of business internally. We're not being bailed out on an ongoing basis. You can't use the economy to cover systemic problems, which they've had before the economy, by the way. The economy has only exacerbated it. And this solution is not going to solve their problem.
But is this small tax really so onerous? What do you think the effects will be in Westchester County?
Well, you know, for some of our hospitals, like our medical center, it's over $1 million. We just had a problem trying to get them whole. For many of our hospitals who were at a press conference yesterday, I mean, hospitals operate on a very, very small margin unless they have, tremendous endowments that are able to back up. And those are services that we all need. All of our nonprofits. It took draconian efforts for me to keep all our nonprofits even, just in terms of my own budget. These people are providing services in a time when their services are drastically needed. And now there's another burden on them. You know, 100,000 here or 50,000 there. Yeah. That's significant.
Right. Well, if we look at the numbers this way, it's one-third of 1% of a payroll tax. That's
34 cents.
That's 34 cents on every $100 of payroll.
Right.
Or just $340 per every $100,000 employee. Would that ever be enough to cause a layoff of that employee?
No, but it might in the aggregate. The hospital is talking in this particular case of 13 layoffs. The medical center here.
Directly tied to this tax?
That's correct, because it's in addition to the other hole that they just tried to fill. And you know, what you've created also, first of all, the governor didn't want this. I mean, he didn't want at least the numbers we're talking about, and certainly not the assembly wanted, because they had halved the amount on the bridge tolls, which logically is probably a better idea because it deals with cars, and cars and trains and reducing emissions, et cetera. That makes some sense.
Why didn't they get an exemption for hospitals in addition to schools?
Because then they have to find more money, or an exemption for governments. I mean, governments are going to have to either cut back services or raise taxes. How bright is that? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. The other thing is, and the more insidious thing is that this is another platform. Now, in politics or in government, platforms are things we set up now that can be increased. Okay. There have been bailouts before, small kinds that don't get to the extent that were,
right.
But like the mortgage tax, which used to go to Sony May and now goes to the MTA. That was supposed to make them whole. Well, we could raise that a little. We can't, you know, until we get to a point where we can't raise that too much, then we move over and we create another tax.
Right.
Westchester already, we already collect right now $121 million a year and give it to the MTA. I'm talking the government collects that. And then we give it for station maintenance, and we give them part of the mortgage tax, $121 million. This is on top of that. You just can't keep putting this kind of money into this kind of a situation. You just can't. They've got to find another way to do this, another way to operate this.
We just have 20 seconds left. Are you among those in favor of Lee Sanders' resignation as head of the MTA?
I know Lee. I think he's a competent guy. I just think that this organization is just run amok. It's very just a big organization. All the authorities have the same problem.
Westchester County Executive Andrew Spano, thank you very much for coming on with us.
You're welcome.
And our follow-up Friday hour continues with a fact check from something that came up during my conversation with Paul Krugman on Tuesday. In talking about the future of automakers, I played a clip of George Will on ABC reacting to President Obama's call for automakers to make greener cars. Here's that clip and Paul Krugman's response.
I assume the president is talking about the Prius. It's affordable because Toyota sells it at a loss. And it can afford to sell it at a loss because it is selling twice as many gas-guzzling pickup trucks of the sort our president detests.
Is this a catch-22 for the taxpayer-owned car company?
You know, I think there's a limit to how much you want. I'll show a little sympathy for George Will here. You don't really want the U.S. government, you know, even though it'll have an effect control, trying to serve too many objectives. It shouldn't be directing the auto companies to make stuff that's going to be money-losing.
It shouldn't be directing auto companies to make stuff that's going to be money-losing, says Paul Krugman. But is the Prius money-losing? They seem to agree on that. Yet a few minutes after that exchange, Yoichi from Sunnyvale, California, posted a note on our comments page that read, "Prius is profitable. Brian, I love your show, but please correct the factual error on air." Will you, Yoichi? That's what Follow-Up Friday is for. So, is the Prius, in fact, profitable? Will George Will be vindicated, or will the Prius be the model for profitable cars in the future? We dug around with the help of environmental journalist Alex Pasternak, and here's the best we can determine. As a rule, Toyota does not release details of its profits, so all we have to go on are some indications from Toyota executives and the results of independent analysis. But last year, Toyota Vice Chairman Kazuo Okamoto told Automotive News that, quote, "We reduced costs of hybrid systems for the current Prius by 50% from the first generation. For the next generation Prius, we'll be able to cut costs by another half, so I think we've been able to ensure the profitability will be similar to regular vehicles such as the Corolla," unquote. Now, that's a pretty positive assessment, though it implies that they had not been profitable in the past. What's more, an independent analysis by Japan's Nikkei shows that Toyota is making about 300,000 yen or $3,100 on each hybrid they sell now, a number similar to what they are making on gasoline-only cars. Now, to be fair, it was only since 2001 that the Prius began to make money. Before that, it was not profitable. And, of course, there are significant research and development costs, including some government subsidies that were sunk into the Prius at the beginning of manufacturing. But if you take R&D costs into account, lots of products would be considered unprofitable. And possibly the biggest indicator of profitability, Toyota has ramped up Prius production each year, something they probably wouldn't do on a loss leader. So all in all, we're awarding the Follow-Up Friday Fact Check Award to that listener, Yoichi. It's not just those gas guzzlers that Obama detests and George Will loves that are making Toyota money. And our Follow-Up Friday Hour continues with a linguistic controversy brewing in our offices. It's all related to something else I said during our Cinco de Mayo broadcast on the Mexican-American experience. Here's what I said to Angelo Cabrera, founder of the Mexican-American Student Association. Angelo, what's the buzz in Mexican New York these days? I know that's a general question, but does anything jump to mind? What's the bochinche on the street? And they laughed, and the discussion went on. But minutes later, on our Facebook page, Jorge Torres showed up to write, "Brian, I love your show, but I have to correct your use of the word bochinche. That word is used among primarily Puerto Ricans and some Panamanians. Mexicans use the word chisme." In essence, Jorge was saying, "Nice try, white guy, but you messed it up." So what is the right Spanish term for gossip when we're talking about Mexicans, or word on the street, or a buzz? Here to help clear it up is friend of the show, Gerson Barrero, columnist for El Diario La Prensa. Gerson, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me. This is a bochinche. This is also a chisme. We're talking about a word that is commonly used by many Latin Americans, especially New York, as you know, the melting pot that we are. And by the way, Brian, what is a nice Jewish boy like you doing talking about bochinche? Where did you pick up the word bochinche?
I know bochinche. I live in Upper Manhattan, man.
Hey, so you was on the number one train, right?
There you go. And listeners, we could take calls for just a few minutes here. What's your favorite word for gossip from your cultural background, whatever it is? Are you Puerto Rican or Mexican or Panamanian? Do you use bochinche or chisme or anything else, or from any other culture? 212-433-WNYC. Give me a great word for buzz or gossip or word on the street if you have one. We're just going to do this for a few minutes, so get them right in. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Gerson, was the listener accurate to say that bochinche is used primarily among Puerto Ricans, not so much among Mexicans?
Well, actually, partially correct, but the fact is that here in New York, that becomes obsolete. For example, bochinche is what when one gossips about any particular theme, whether it be in the entertainment world, politics, anything in the neighborhood, a neighbor or somebody else's wife, etc. So the bochinche becomes part of the rumor mill, the gossip mill, right? Chismoso or chisme is the person who actually talks the bochinche, the person who actually, you know, carries on the gossip is a chismoso. Yeah. And the chisme is also referred to in Puerto Ricans have you heard the chisme? So you can use bochinche. I don't know what this person was talking about. It may be in Mexico. To my knowledge, it's used commonly by everyone. There's no definition for it.
It sounds like bochinche has a more negative connotation, like rumors.
Well, not so much. Bochinche is the kind of thing that we all do. We love it. We all deny we do it. You know, it's the kind of stuff that appears printed on page 6. Bochinche, chisme. You know, there's another word. It's interesting because in our respective countries, for example, there's a word that refers to, in Puerto Rico we use it, it refers to the male organ, which is bicho, and yet bicho means insect throughout Latin America. When we use it, they laugh at us. They say, why are you saying that as referring to the male organ? So it's very intricate, but in New York, everybody uses it, you know, without any problem.
All right. David in Manhattan, who is half Panamanian, thinks he's got some background here. Hi, David.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So, bochinche?
Bochinches I have heard many, many times. I spent a lot of time in Panama, and my understanding of it has always been as gossip. In fact,
as gossip.
Yeah, Ruben Blades, the Panamanian singer, who's also the Minister of Culture in Panama right now,
right,
has a song called Bochinches on one of his recent records, which alludes to gossip quite a bit.
All right, David, thanks a lot. And Luisa in Paramus, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is a wonderful, lightweight topic, considering all the stuff that's going on in the world. But I just wanted to add that I'm from Cuba, and we use the word bochinche. And usually for us, is bochinche is the trouble that is caused by the chisme, by the gossip itself. And someone who loves to indulge in this is known as a bochinchero.
There you go. I like that. Great explanation.
The trouble that's caused by the chisme.
That's right.
Luisa, thank you very much. Andrew in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Brian. Just love your show, and you always rock, even though you are an unhip white guy. I want to say, the one that I'm coming with, I'm an unhip white guy too, is an old Irish expression, which is, what's the rumpus?
The rumpus.
Yep, exactly. What's the rumpus, man? What's rocking around?
Which, you know, that the rumpus to your caller, the rumpus could mean something else to a lot of people, right?
Sure, well, it means, yeah, it can mean, you know, it can mean what's
we know
the trouble, what's the ruckus.
Yeah,
almost,
Gerson's
but,
thinking about something else.
Okay, see, it's my Puerto Rican ear. You see, I got you into trouble.
I don't know, you're going there in a few of your answers here, Gerson. Pamela in Queens, you're on WNYC.
First, I'd like to remind your guests there are lots of nice Jewish boys and girls who were born and raised in Latin American countries.
Absolutely, you're right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And throughout, Argentina has a large Jewish population. So did Cuba at one point.
Claro que sí, yeah.
Usted es judía. Are you Jewish?
I am Jewish, and I'd like to give you an expression in Yiddish.
Go ahead.
And it's called Vos Titzok, and it's what's the word on the street?
What is it again?
It's called Vos Titzok.
Oh, my God. For a Puerto Rican right now, they must be laughing their heads off right now because it sounds like something else.
Pamela, thank you very much. But, by the way, we had the caller talking about the Irish expression. Speaking of Irish slang, what's lahara?
What? Lahara. Oh, it's Puerto Ricans. When we first arrived here in the city, most of the police officers were, you know, Irish, and a lot, the O'Hara name is very common. So what we were doing was, and able to identify the police officers, we would call them, ahí viene la Jara, here comes O'Hara, instead of O'Hara, la Jara. So it came to mean, for Puerto Ricans of my generation, it meant the police officer, the cop on the beat. And as you know, Brian, we grew up in the city, and in the Bronx, ahí viene la Jara, and there was an actually songs that were, you know, referring to la Jara. It turned from O'Hara, unable to pronounce it, to saying La Jara, to identify the cop on the beat that was coming down the block.
So, Gerson Barrero, El Diario La Prensa columnist, you got to come back when you have some good bochinche for us. Okay?
Oh, I always do, Brian. At your calling, I'll be there. Thank you so much.
Chisme that you are.
Yeah, okay. Chismoso. I'm a chismoso.
Okay, the most. Thank you very much.
Take care, buddy.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we conclude our Friday follow-ups with a call-in on the question, do you work as hard as an investment banker? I ask as a follow-up to the segment we did recently on the New York Magazine article, The Whale of the 1%. Did you hear that? That was about some investment bankers at the bailed-out banks, and we're coming to this clip of a caller, being irritated that they're being asked to live with salary caps and now tax hikes because their industry failed the country. Typical of the sentiment was this call we got from Michael in Park Slope. All right. So you know what? We're going to take a break, and then we will come back and get that call up. But here's the question for you. If you think you work as hard as an investment banker, call us. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. If I had the presence of mind to ask that caller, who we'll hear from in a minute, I might have asked him how hard he thinks the people who cleans his office work or the people who take care of his kids. But we're following up today to give you a chance to answer the question, do you work as hard as an investment banker? If you think you do, call us and tell us what you do and how hard you work. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.